It was the third week of torts, and America was at war at last, though Nesheim knew his own war was over. He sat near the back of the large lecture room in Stuart Hall at the University of Chicago, trying not to yawn. The room was only sparsely filled, for enrollment in the college had declined dramatically since the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor the year before. The few law students remaining consisted of what Winograd, who sat beside Nesheim now, called cripples, COs, and girls, a charmless description which Winograd told Nesheim he felt entitled to make since he was himself classed 4F and exempted on medical grounds. A beefy Minnesotan, he looked like perfect cannon fodder until he took an awkward step or two, and you saw that his foot was encased in a thick boot that had a specially built 4-inch heel. "I run in with a tractor," he'd explained. "Mr. Nesheim?" The voice broke through Nesheim's thoughts, and he looked up to find Professor Fielding staring at him. After war had been declared the previous year, half the faculty had decamped to bear arms or serve the burgeoning needs of the government in Washington. Fielding was one of those emeritus professors persuaded to come out of retirement to fill those vacancies. But unlike others who were keen to step into their old shoes, he clearly resented the lame ducks he was now teaching. He had served in the final months of the last war with the American Expeditionary Force in France, and had mentioned this in the very first class, as if to distance himself from his non-combatant audience. Not that he looked like any kind of soldier. He was a dapper figure, smartly dressed today in a three-piece suit of sage-colored tweed that had been tailored in a more luxurious peacetime era. He had a thick, graying mustache that he stroked tenderly on the rare occasions he listened to a student. Now Fielding went on, his tone a mix of insincere optimism and authentic impatience. "You looked a million miles away, Mr. Nesheim. Where were you, I wonder? Guadalcanal, perhaps, or North Africa?" "Pearl Harbor, actually," thought Nesheim, though he wouldn't have dreamed of saying so. His presence there on the day the Japanese attacked wouldn't have been believed. But Fielding was happy to continue on his own. "I acknowledge that the conflicts we engage in here may seem pallid by comparison, but this is the theater of operations we have all been assigned to. So would it help, Mr. Nesheim, if I repeated the question?" It wouldn't help at all, thought Nesheim, wondering how this was going to unravel. His written work, so far, had been well received, but in class he found his mind wandering. Fortunately, Fielding was distracted by a new arrival. A young woman walked confidently down the far aisle of the lecture hall, heading for the seats at the front. Usually, students who were late entered quietly, slinking into the back rows of the lecture room. But this woman made no effort to disguise her entrance, and her heels clicked like match strikes on the parquet floor. She was a breath of fresh air in this stuffy balloon of a room, and somehow familiar, too, although her face was shielded by the angle from which Nesheim viewed her, and by thick, glossy hair that fell back upon her shoulders. It was the color of burnt honey. She wore an elegant overcoat, the same color as Fielding's tweed suit, but of softer-looking, finer material. As she slowed down, Nesheim caught a glimpse of her charcoal stockings and of well-shaped legs he was pretty sure he'd seen before. Winograd nudged him with an elbow and said in a whisper that could have carried downtown to the Loop, "Catch a gander of that." At the lectern, Fielding looked suspiciously at this new arrival, for he didn't like to be upstaged. "And you are, miss?"
"Very late, Professor." Her voice was smoky and low. 3 weeks late, I know, but I couldn't get a train from the coast for love or money. All the soldier boys have priority. Heavens knows why. There ought to be a law against it."
Even Fielding smiled at this, though briefly.
"You're going to have a lot of catching up to do, miss."
She ignored the question.
"I know, I usually do, Professor."
She sat down, having spread her coat out on the chair behind her and taken off her neat black gloves, then used both hands to push her hair back. Suddenly, Nesheim could see her profile and understood with a sudden, awful clarity why she seemed familiar. She said, "Don't worry, I always seem to get there in the end."